Now entering Nerdist.com.
Well, hello there. Hey, I've got a question for you. Would you like a free vibrator? Would you? Well, AdamandEve.com is determined to help you spice things up in the bedroom, and they're backing up that promise. So check this out. Go to AdamandEve.com and type in sexnerd at checkout, and you'll get 50% off almost any item when you enter that offer code. But wait, there is more. If you do it now, you'll also get a free Big O kit. Adam and Eve's Big O kit includes their exclusive climax gel and a mini vibrator. That's right. Hey, you'll also get your entire order sent to you for free. It's winning. So hurry, take advantage of this deal while it lasts. You can choose a new adult toy, a naughty video, or almost anything else for 50% off. Hey, and you get that free shipping and the Big O kit vibrator. Just use offer code sexnerd at checkout. Okay, that's sexnerd at adamandeve.com. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hey you, hey, this episode was going to be on water sports, of all things. I was going to explore why people might urinate on other people, and why some people want to be peed on by other folks. But instead, I do want to issue a trigger warning, because the things that we will be talking about during this episode may be disturbing, might trigger strong feelings. Possibly very strong negative feelings. And we will be talking about gender relationships, feminism, mental health issues, compassion, lack of compassion, bullying. There will be a lot of elements that will come together during this episode. So I'm just letting you know now, in case you don't want to go that deep into it. Stay tuned for next week's episode, which is on peeing on people. So moving forward, because I don't know when you'll be listening to this episode. It could be 2 years from now. We're talking about a mass murder, an act of domestic terrorism, basically, that happened near University of California at Santa Barbara, in the name of not getting laid. And, well, that's a pretty big fish to fry. I mean, there's, if you know the story, you know there's a lot of moving parts, and, you know, that is a difficult summary of something that feels much more complex than that. But since then, the internet and media have exploded with analysis of all sorts. Now, I wasn't personally involved. I didn't know anyone involved with this violent act. My deep, deep condolences go out to the loved ones and for the lives lost. I have been reminded at how valuable I feel each human life really is, and thinking of the families and loved ones left to their grief, it's a difficult thing. It really is. So with that in mind, you know, I want to turn my attention to how the media and the internet has reacted, because this is important. I mean, we blame the internet like, oh, it's a cesspool of people being weird. Well, that's where so many of us spend our time. And there's a lot of feelings that people have about all sorts of things. And I want to kind of delve in. So people get triggered. There are causes that have been rallied around. Is it about gun control? Is it about bullying? Is it about misogyny, rape culture, mental health, bullying, entitlement? You know, I've read about it from all sorts of angles, from the New York Times to the CNN to Twitter to BuzzFeed. A few pieces that I wanted to specifically mention. One, for folks who resonate with the shooter's struggles with rejection and dating, there's a piece that the comedian and entertainer Chris Gethard just wrote called Overcoming Your Programming and Be a Better Man. And then there was one by Amanda Hess on Slate called The Pickup Artist Community's Predictable Response to, I don't even have the rest of the title, but it's basically a response to the shooting. It's interesting. It really is, because the pickup artist community has come up a lot in this conversation, and Well, that's not what we're paying attention to here. But anyway, a few things. Also, Mark Manson, who's a writer that I enjoy his pieces online, wrote one on it being an act of domestic terrorism. And his piece is called How We All Miss the Point on School Shootings. So those are bits that I really appreciated. Oh, there was also an article by a psychologist named Mark Gulston called Preventing Future Isla Vistas, Sucking the Poison Out. It's all about communication with someone who is at a dark point. And so, you know, just I learned some really interesting things about how to communicate with someone compassionately so that they feel heard. Anyway, things. Let's get down to business. So I've been trying to understand. I mean, it had a nerve with me because we so often talk on this show about feelings. We talk about being rejected and bullied and unloved and feeling undesirable and feeling harassed and feeling unsafe. These are universal feelings that each of us feel to a certain degree. And it touches on these things. And I gave it a lot of thought and I read into the shooter's materials that he left behind. But spending time with that stuff, I mean, I started to get a little bit of a Stockholm syndrome situation, you know, where the hostage feels empathy or sympathy for their captors. Let's get something straight. I want to break this shooter's just all the bones in his body. Like, to express the amount of rage that I have when someone takes other people's lives, it is unacceptable. I don't even know what to say. Because all I do is clench my fist. You know, I'm just clenching my fist real hard. So many people have been triggered deeply. I'm definitely not alone in that. So my urge is to understand and process. And this episode is part of my journey in coming to terms with a lot of the questions that came up for me and for others in the wake of this. I've accepted that I will never understand, really. And that I realize that I do feel powerless because I mean, you know, I don't have a TARDIS. I don't have a Doc Brown build me a car that flies into the past or the future, depending on which buttons I press, which would be so cool. I don't even have a shaggy dog. So I can't do anything about what has happened. And that really pisses me off. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I'm going to be talking to Dr. Chris Donahue first, and we'll be talking about mental health and compassion and many just juicy bits of psychology come up, which I really enjoyed. And then we go to Barbie Davenport, a friend of mine who does a lot of great work in the sex ed industry, and as a PR person and just an all around amazing businesswoman. And we're going to talk about the experience of being a woman in the world and our feelings around the hashtags. Remember, are you aware of the hashtags? So there's going to be that too. Hey, I'm really excited that you're here with me. Let's get to it. Okay. First off, Dr. Chris Donahue, let's do this. Dr. Chris Donahue, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Am I saying your last name right?
Yeah, Donahue.
Okay, just want to make sure. Because when I spell it, I'm all like Donahue.
Yeah, that G throws everybody off.
I like it, though. It feels very, it's like you're exotic.
Oh, wow. All right, I'll accept that. I like that.
Excellent. So, number one, thank you for being part of the cheating episode, because it was fantastic. You gave a great podcast.
Yeah, that was fun, and that's always a very important topic, also a hot topic, but it doesn't really get a lot of the right presence and conversation going that it needs to, so I'm glad we did it.
Well, guess what? Today, we're going to do more of that, giving some attention to stuff that doesn't get great attention, because we're going to be talking. I mean, I've given an intro already, so people have already kind of heard some basic ideas and feelings that I have about this. But this shooting that happened this past weekend at UCSB, where the shooter was all, you know, hating on women and feeling really rejected by the world and like took it out on sorority people, etc. And a lot of people are saying, well, he's clearly crazy.
It's not misogyny. It's not anything else. It's just the boy is crazy. Clearly, the end, move on. And you are a mental health professional person. What are your feelings about that?
I think it's a lot broader than just that, right? So a lot of people are talking about, was it the mental health issues that led to the loneliness and isolation, or was it the loneliness and isolation that might have created the mental health issues? And I think it's both. One of the things that's really, really important in terms of psychology is relationality and relationship. And in order to be in relationship, it requires a lot of mental health. Mm-hmm. And people that really struggle in relationships tend to lack really great mental health. So if this was someone who felt really lonely and in fact was rejected by people, then this is going to be someone who doesn't have a lot of good relationship skills, because he didn't have relationships to help him learn how to develop those skills. So I think they
kind of major chicken and egg situation.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And I hate that cliche. That's why I didn't use that reference, but that's what it is. And regardless of which one came first, they definitely feed and perpetuate and sustain each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to use that metaphor again, because when there's a chicken and egg situation, I know I have listeners who are single, who are frustrated, who are trying to get into relationships, are challenged by it. I realize there's a whole population of humans out there who have been bullied, etc. Not all of them are going to start being violent toward strangers. I am kind of divorcing myself from the idea that I need to figure this guy out. You know, like, it's... I kind of want to move on to the future of, like, oh my God, there are other people out there who are probably frustrated and kind of won't do that, but also resonate with his feelings of loneliness and isolation. And I guess my feeling is, could it have been prevented through, I mean, a lot of people are making jokes online, like, oh, if he'd gotten laid, he wouldn't have done this. I feel like maybe when people get into relationships and don't have good relationship skills and project onto other people that they hate them, because he was, a lot of what he was saying, because I did read a little bit of his manifesto, and, you know, I was like trying to like explore the mind of a killer. And I was like, let me stop doing that, because it's weird. But at some point there was so much stress around being around other people, he started to perceive other people as hating him when they probably had no opinion whatsoever about him.
Most likely, as you said earlier, he had to have started off with some kind of weakened psychological foundation. Because as you said, a lot of people suffer from loneliness and rejection and do not do things like this and are not going to handle it in this capacity. So there had to have been some kind of weakened state. But ask me your last question again. So
I think I was more just expressing, I was just kind of vomiting out feelings. I more give you the responsibility of having actual facts and figures, and I just am feeling things.
Okay, so I'll say this. Psychologically, one of the most damaging experiences we can have is isolation. Okay. If you isolate someone, that is the most abusive thing you could do. And what happens to someone when they're in isolation is they start to completely fragment.
What is that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we need other people to remind us of reality and hold us accountable to reality. So without being embedded in any kind of relationship, it's really easy for us to spin out and to start to move into fantasy and believe it. And that's probably what happened with this guy. He didn't have anyone around him to question or challenge the distortions he's making up about how the world perceived him. Because you're right, there had to have been some people that might have actually enjoyed him or liked him. Or even if they didn't, why was there not someone around him that could have said to him, hey, there's a lot of us that experience this as well. So again, that's what happens in isolation, is there's nothing there to challenge these fantasies that we create.
Okay, I'm sorry, but like, you're blowing my mind right now, because I have, I can't talk.
your mind is that blown.
Well, fragmentation is interesting, because sometimes I'll get into long stints where I'm just on the computer, on Facebook, whatever. And I know a lot of people are the same way. I'll start to feel like, oh, wow, I need to be socialized and be around people. Otherwise, I will just be a crazy person. Like, I feel the need for people to get me back on track. And so I know that sense of, like, I need to be grounded. So I guess, and I see that in other people.
Okay. Now imagine that experience, but infuse into that experience rejection and anger. So you're dissociated from the world, as one would be lost on the computer or in a video game for a length of time. And then again, bring in the anger and the rejection. What do you then do from that place of dissociation or confusion? You probably start to make some really odd decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to disclose now. I realize it's very unprofessional, but I did mention several months ago that I do have a history of depression, and a lot of really healthy skills have come out of the last couple of years, which has been great. But I also have a history. I don't know if I've said this, but it's not a huge deal. Several friends know, but I have a history of also suicidal tendencies. And what I recognized was that it's those times that I didn't check in with other people and didn't talk to anyone where it started to get into like this weird crazy place where it was a little irrational. But then I'd be like, Sandra, you're being a little irrational. Let's stop being irrational and go find a person and figure this out. Maybe Google some articles, you know, and then you get back on track. So whether it's in or out toward the world and violent or inward, like self-destructive, I feel like a lot of people are probably
can relate to that
and also are not talking about their feelings, the parts of them that, and hiding that.
And a healthy part of him was the part of him that was posting this, I think, on YouTube, because that was the part of him that was actually seeking support or attention or validation. That was him attempting to take it to someone or something. When you post something on Facebook or you tweet something, you're trying to speak to the world in some capacity, and the only method you know how. And so that was his attempt, I think, to relate. And sadly, there was no one on the receiving end or no one healthy on the receiving end to relate back. Although I know that his mom did find some of the initial pieces of some of these videos, I think, prior. Mm-hmm. And people tried, and he was working with mental health experts. But again, sadly, he didn't have friends around him to call out that some of the stuff was bad or problematic.
Yeah. God. Ugh. Yeah. anyway, sounds aside, you mentioned before we started that you saw another mental health professional on a major network throw down some knowledge.
Yeah, and we're going to use that word mental health professional very lightly, because every now and then I hear these statements from people that work in my field, and it's kind of shameful what they say. But Robbie Ludwig, who's a psychologist that works a lot with Fox News, tried to pin a lot of what happened on what she believed were homosexual impulses in Elliot that he was really trying to kind of defend against, and that she was making it about the anger he had towards men that didn't choose him, but were in fact choosing these other women, which is a very, very bizarre spin. And I'm not really even sure where she was going with that or coming from with that.
What it was founded on.
Exactly. I mean, talk about a really loose, flimsy theory. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it's an attempt to kind of villainize this guy. Not that he needs any more of that. This is someone who did, you know, something really heinous. But to bring sexual orientation into it is just such a bizarre thing, because again, this is someone who was struggling with rejection from men and women and having really, really low self-esteem. And that's kind of what this was more about.
I absolutely agree. Even beyond, I mean, beyond her, a lot of like the pickup artist community and a lot of groups where men were some writers were saying distance themselves from the situation because he did frequent those communities, men's rights, etc. He was kind of in those online worlds. But a lot of, he's gay, look at his face, pushing him away as he's this other thing we do not like, so therefore... Ugh.
Yeah, because if you make him an other, then it's easy to, again, make him somewhat of a monster when, as you kind of said earlier, I think everyone can relate to components of what he went through, not as drastically, but we've all struggled with not maybe getting the love or the sex we want. We've all struggled with a sense of rejection or being, you know, emasculated or not feeling good enough.
Oh, I know about that feeling, right, you guys? Okay. So then there's this other thing. Where on top of there's the not feeling like you're liked by anyone. There was also, it was odd because I saw it almost as projection. I don't know what the official words are to describe this, but when something that you feel about yourself, you imagine that other people are feeling it toward you instead of yourself. Because in his videos and things, it was very much like, you'll see that I'm a god, I will kill you all, etc. And then you'll see, like, I'm a perfect guy, how could you be with other guys? And so a lot of people are saying entitlement in kind of, and a lot of great discourses come out of the idea that some people think that they are entitled to other people's bodies and affection just for being who they are, which is not accurate in any way. Like, I don't owe anyone anything with my body or feelings. And neither do you, listener person. So I think of it as like delusional and a lot of imagined worth stuff. But when you think of yourself as a god and perfect, I start thinking about schizophrenia or something like that. But then maybe I'm taking I'm getting too loose because I'm not a psychologist.
Do you work on Fox News? I would say a couple things. Number one, when someone feels so weakened and diminished, you have to find something powerful to kind of identify with. And so this God concept was his attempt to find power somewhere. And he felt so broken. And when you feel so diminished, you have to create some kind of act, and usually comes out of anger, to again re-empower yourself. And that's what I think this slaughter was about, is somehow taking the power back in dynamics where he felt powerless. The entitlement thing is brilliant, because I also agree with you that no one's entitled to a response from anyone in any capacity. And just because you ask someone out does not mean that you're entitled to any response from them even at all. But that comes back to social skills. If he was more socialized, he would have had experiences of rejection, and then he would have had someone follow up and relate to him from that. He might have had some positive experiences. So again, I have to question his history of rejection. If it's been so powerful and he's not able to kind of cope around that, I have to believe that he's been somehow hidden from it a lot of his life, because we've all gotten comfortable with those experiences. Mm-hmm. That's just part of a living. So I don't know if he was raised in a family where they really protected him from everything like that. But most of us, that's just kind of part of how life is for us at times.
I read at least 10 different articles. I mean, I was all up in the internet and trying to see what different people were saying, because I have such a hard time. Because what I immediately want to do is understand the person who created such violence.
But you won't, because, you know, this is someone who did something that's beyond the scope of what most of us can imagine doing. And it's beyond the scope of what most of us would do to cope. And so this is something we can't understand. These are things we can't wrap our head around, and not going to be able to.
It's true. It's looking like someone told me that the reason we like babies and puppies is because when we see their faces, they look like there's so much going on, but you can't solve the sentence. Like, it seems like they're in the middle of a thought and you're trying to help solve it with them, but it's a baby and a puppy, so you can't. And it's kind of, my brain is the same sort of this unfinished, you can never really understand that. Oh, it's so,
well, and people are complex. I think to attempt to find one simple thing, like it's just rejection, or like this, you know, poor mental health worker on Fox News saying, oh, it's because he's gay. People are far more complex than that. It's going to take a multitude of things intersecting to create some kind of outcome like this. So our attempt to understand it is going to be flawed, because it's complex. It's years and years and layers of things that lead to something like this. So we're not going to be able to pinpoint it on one thing.
Okay. So I'm going to put this dude to rest. Not in peace. I hope he's, well, anyway. But so what I've seen now, what I've witnessed, and I think is important to understand, is that there's been a lot of conversation around misogyny, about hatred of women. I mean, there's clearly a lot of hate speech around women. And I imagine, because there are these groups of people who have a lot of hate speech toward females. And the thing is that it's familiar. And that's what's so scary to me, and that I haven't seen anyone talk about, is that reading the transcripts of the videos and looking into some of his writings, I was like, this is not the first time I've seen this language. I've heard people be like, oh, God, like, women are terrible, or like, men are. So, like, people who just kind of take their negative experiences and project it on the entire group.
And let me actually broaden that, because you're right. But you know what perpetuates that? The continualized, forced and flawed distinction between men and women as two discrete and separate categories. And I don't know if this is a tangent you want to go off on a little bit.
Oh, break it down, okay. Because I feel like more women are like men than all women are like each other.
Okay. There is often more differences between women and women and men than there is between men and women. And that's a huge component. A lot of my research, writing, clinical work, and my book that's coming out next year, uh-huh. Early next year, the new sex, pick it up. But I talk a lot about that, where we have like 2% genetic difference. There is no universal woman or man. People are both masculine and feminine in different ways. And I think this men are from Mars, women are from Venus concept further perpetuates the violence against women, because it makes them an other, and it creates more distance and confusion between men and women. And men feel disempowered because they're confused and they don't understand. And so I work with my clients and let them know that gender is a social construct that doesn't exist, and that men and women can be more similar and are very similar, and that it's not some foreign other. And I think that's the important piece in this, is that as long as we can keep separating out these two genders in school, out in the world, and everywhere else, we're going to maintain the violence.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Turning it around, just because, I mean, I think talking about gender and the fight of the sexes, which is kind of dumb. We all suffer. It's like, it's not like, so many things. What are the differences between men and women? Like, are there any specific different, like, that are tendencies?
It's hard because, again, as a sex therapist where I work with my clients around relationships and sex, I see the same probably top 3 to 5 issues in both of them, where everyone wants to be loved. Everyone wants relationship and bonding. Everyone wants affection. All couples, whether they're, you know, mixed or, same gender, want, boundaries and communication. And so at the end of the day, there is no female sexuality or male sexuality. There's sexualities because they each have different distinctions within them and commonalities. And so the commonality in all women, would just be their struggle with that identity that they necessarily don't even live up to and sometimes are injured by. That's all I can come up with.
I struggle about feeling like I'm supposed to be a woman all the time. It's really not helpful.
Sure. There's a standard that's been decided that you didn't agree upon, that you're being held accountable to, that you're failing at, because we all fail at it. No one actually meets all the criteria for man or woman. And you're better served by actually distancing yourself from those concepts.
Well, I've been doing my part, you know. I identify transy, you know, chill, little fluid.
I'll tell you, I think people that have a trans identity are the healthy ones, because we should be confused about identity. Anyone that tells me, I know I'm a man or I know I'm a woman, I'm solid and confident in that, I think, really? That's not actually healthy. You shouldn't be. You should have some struggles within that. So I think the trans community are the ones that are actually showing health, because gender and sex should have change and shift and malleability and confusion.
Okay. This is my own tangent, but I think it's important. What about, but it's also actually, because these words have been, phrases have been used, alpha man, right, or alpha male versus beta male. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of type A versus type B, some people who are a little bit more aggressive and, you know, play offense versus play defense. So I get that, but to be calling, kind of diminishing someone by calling them a beta male, do you have any opinions about that?
Yeah. How emasculating, how diminishing, to be put on a hierarchy and at the bottom of it in a culture that really supports and legitimizes things like aggression and assertion, especially in a male. Because basically what you're saying is, if you're saying you're a beta male, you're saying you don't live up to the male ideal. And that skews then towards words like femininity, which is not a bad word, but again, for a man in our culture, it's looked at as such. So that's horrific. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's damaging. That's really damaging.
I also feel like I have dated a lot of nerdy guys. That's just, I think on an actual episode where Chris Hardwick was on my episode, and he was like, why do you do that? I don't know if it was before I got on mic or.
That's confusing me that he was wondering why you do that.
It was within context, but he's like, why do you date nerdy guys? And I was like, I'm realizing now that, because it was the only way. I mean, I was just attracted to people who were highly intelligent and a little bit shyer, and I just feel safer and more comfortable with that type of personality. But also, I'm like that, and so I like being around like. And even though my personality seems more like kind of like a tomboy, mm-hmm. kind of jock, sort of, I don't know. Like, I was compared to Janine Garofalo a lot.
That you're throwing yourself right into these masculine based terms,
right? Exactly. It's like I have no other way of describing myself. I mean, but, you know, I did do a lot of things that were more what guys do, you know. But, yeah, I just tended to date nerdy guys. But then it's also to be like the person who's like, hey, don't worry. There are girls who like to date you. Don't be mad at all women. It kind of just feels like I'm part of the problem sometimes. It's like this concept, like I've got to like.
Well, I think it folds into the idea that it's okay if people don't like you. We have this fear of not being liked, and it's something that we have to get comfortable with. I think rejection, and I pointed this out wondering what Elliot's prior experience of rejection were, that this was so hard on him, but we have to get comfortable with rejection. So I tell clients, I want you to ask people out that would never say yes to you, because until you can confidently get through rejection, then you can't go any further and you're not ready for the even acceptance. So ask people out that will tell you no, so you can keep your head held high and confidently say that's okay and walk away feeling okay. And until you can handle that, you're not ready to actually go out with someone that would want to go out with you.
That's good. That is really good.
That's why I do what I do.
I haven't asked anyone out that I think I've played it safe a lot in my love life.
Yeah, but you know what that does is that keeps you weakened. Right? That keeps your anxiety in a really, really low threshold. Because the feeling is, if I ask that person out and I think they might tell me no, I can't tolerate what that would feel like. And so I back away from it. And guess what happens? You're actually missing out and you're actually holding that person back from maybe having gotten you.
Oh, because I do that even with friendship where I'm like, oh, they wouldn't want to be friends with me or hang out. I do that to myself.
You have to, you know, what I say to my clients, the one mantra, if nothing else to say to them is anything that makes you anxious, that's what your work is.
Dude, my entire every day is anxious.
Well, then you're going to be a superhero.
I'm doing some really great work. I swear.
Really good work.
I want to get into, even though we just kind of deconstructed gender, I mean, we solved everything. Like, we saved the world. But there is this hashtag that really hit home with me, hashtag yes, all women, because there was a lot of not all men. And it came out of a lot of, response like, Hey, you've got to qualify these statements about guys because not all guys are violent toward women. You know, a lot of guys are respectful and a lot of women were frustrated because we all kind of know, like, it's not all men. Not all men are terrible. Like, and anytime we are going to hate on an entire group, it's clearly irrational. Like, it just doesn't, it's not logical to do that. But all women have experienced harassment or violence from men. Like the fact that it never fully hit me until I started looking into this hashtag and go, oh my God, it really, like, I've experienced many experiences of violence and harassment from men throughout my life. And I feel like if you just asked me and if I had never thought about it, I'd be like, oh yeah, no, I've never. But then I think about it, I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I have.
And do you think off the cuff, had you been asked and you would have said no, not never, that's because you were so comfortable and used to it that it didn't stand out to you?
Beside one police report I had to file for someone who was a stranger who stalked me on the street once. Beside that one time, that was really, like, it was an uncomfortable evening. Definitely a little post-traumatic stress there. But I've never been I've never been raped. I appreciate that, you know, but the fact that I have to be thankful that I haven't had a major violent, experience like that is like the fact that I am like, ooh, whew, dodge that bullet. Like, what? Like, that's a thing. I don't know. I'm feeling a lot of rage, not at men, but rage at the experience that the fact that even though I live in and work in a field where to say all people are, it is not a really, mm-hmm. you can't really say that. Mm-hmm. The fact that I can confidently say all women have mm-hmm. experienced this is really fucked up, man.
Yeah, but what you're doing right there is we're going back to the fact that it's a gender issue. And I think some of it is born out of the maintenance of gender, that the maintenance of gender creates this you versus us. It keeps us separated, which means it keeps you confusing to us. It keeps you distinct from us. And I think that part of the work of breaking down the violence against genders is to dissolve some of that concept.
Well, because some men have been harassed too and raped and whatnot. So we're thinking, we're talking basically a majority of humans have had this sort of experience. Is that better?
Yes, thank you. But let me say this, because we're speaking right now about sexual violence specifically, I think it's important to also look at the fact that one of the things that perpetuates that is that the way we're trained around sex is that it's something to delay and avoid. Thereby, again, like we talked about Elliot having gotten no social skills from having had no relationships, you learn no sexual communication or social skills. And then at some point, arbitrarily, all of a sudden, it's allowed, it's legal, and you're supposed to understand how to go out with your hormones raging and manage sexuality. And it doesn't work well. And so I'm not supporting anyone's bad behavior, but what I am saying is that sex education, and I don't mean just institutionally, but also socially and familiarly, has to begin immediately. And children should be learning how to use sexual negotiation, social skills from a very young age, and have it slowly brought in so that it's manageable and understandable, as opposed to, again, how we do it now, which is out of the blue, all of a sudden you're 18 and now everyone's saying sex is great, go do it, and someone's supposed to understand how to handle this.
Absolute panic
for both genders on both ends of it. Yeah. Yeah. And also the maintenance of the idea that, you know, again, it's a cliche, I hate them, but that men are supposed to be the asserter and the aggressor, and they don't know how to manage that, and that women are supposed to be a little withholding and repressive. And so that doesn't empower a woman to understand how to say yes. There's a great feminist book called Yes Means Yes, which is about empowering women to feel confident saying, I'm sexual and I want sex. I don't need to be approached for it. I myself can actually practically go after it. And women need to learn how to also manage sexuality and sexual boundaries too.
Yeah. And it's fun when you can do more things, because always waiting for somebody else to do stuff is... Amen. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, it is. But this hashtag is really, really, really brilliant, because I think what it's calling out attention to is that it's really going to be, at this point, hard-pressed to find any woman who hasn't had some sort of violence imposed upon her.
Dude. Yeah. It's... I don't know.
But that's why podcasts like this are so important, because it's getting people more comfortable with the topic of sexuality and getting discussion going. And that's what it really is about, is people unpacking all of this.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, Chris, we're doing good work. You've got your show, right? Bad Sex.
Yes. Bad Sex, which airs on, Logo on Tuesday nights at 10 PM. Which is, a show where I'm doing sex therapy with individuals struggling in different capacities. And the brilliance of that show has been that it's gotten a lot of dialogue going around sex, and it's also normalized sex and brought sex into people's homes and their learning skills.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Last quick question.
Sure.
Because a lot of people are saying that it's not right to give compassion or feel compassion for someone who has chosen to mass murder people and explore them. Like, we have spent a half an hour kind of exploring the experience of a person who would choose, well, one of the people who has chosen to do this, but who has a shared experience with many people. I don't think he realized that, but the idea that, no, stop analyzing anyone who would even choose to do this. They're just terrible people. And the entitlement thing, it's like, get over yourselves, because the real issue is violence toward women.
Well, I think anger really distracts us from looking at the real issues. And so I understand that people go right to anger, and that's appropriate. But once you work through that, I think the best thing to look at is how we all have some of this. We all have some of this in us, and we all have these capacities, not to that massive extent, but we all have anger and sadness and loneliness around rejection and love and sex. And so I think we can relate to him a lot more than we want to acknowledge. And I think the anger keeps us from acknowledging that. But I think the healthiest place to land, as hard as it is always with compassion, which is not excusing what he did, but it's understanding that what must have gone wrong in this person's life that set them up to do this, because this isn't something typical or common, and something clearly had to have occurred, and to really feel bad for that person, because this person was hurting.
And you'd said before we started that, you pointed out, because it kind of, like, it was a little click in my brain, but he didn't just hate women.
He hated everybody. I mean, he was feeling really diminished and oppressed by the entire world. Didn't feel taken care of by his parents, his roommates, the women he asked out, or even men in general. So this is just hatred towards humanity. This is someone who felt rejected by everybody.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like one of those bleeding hearts, you know, like, God, what do I, it's like, well, I should hate the person who did the thing. But I kind of just feel like maybe I just think that just, I imagine that most people are genuinely good, but there's a lot of nurture that really, there's a lot of, I mean, some people that, okay. Oh, more questions.
Good.
Are some people just going to do this no matter what?
Yeah. I don't know that there's a surefire solution to stop all this from happening. Because again, I think in my mind, one of the most damaging things that can occur are social events, and social things either heal us and make us healthier and better than we were before, or they make us worse and they weaken us. And I think the power is in socialization. And so based on how we are and who we are, we're going to always be making people better or worse. And this is something that's going to occur again, most likely.
All right. Well, there's plenty of great people in the world doing great work. And I think a lot of people get the things that they need because people are doing great work and are compassionate in the world. And I wish more people in their interpersonal relationships, even with a classmate, even with their neighbor, whoever, I wish more people gave a little more kindness.
Yeah, you'll be better served in life by having a larger capacity for empathy. I promise you that. If you can work on not going to anger and pathologizing people, and instead go to compassion and empathy, you will be better served always.
hell yeah. And that feels good. I feel really good. That was a good note. I'm like, I feel healed now. Where can people find you out in the world?
Okay. So Twitter's at Chris Donahue, DonaghuE. And also my website, which is drchrisdonahue.com.
Fantastic. And, you see clients in the Beverly Hills area?
I do. I have a private practice in Beverly Hills doing couples, marital, and sex therapy.
Awesome. You're going to be super famous one day. I totally feel like it.
With your help, I will, yes.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's always a blast.
Hello, Barbie Davenport.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Didn't we talk about like whiskey dick last time you were on? Has it really been that long?
It has. Oh, man.
And here we are in your living room, your beautiful, beautiful mm-hmm. living room.
Oh, well, thank you for coming over. This has been so fun.
Yeah, really fun. Shootings, death, massacre.
Oh, yeah, aside that part. But we did have a good conversation before.
No, it's always wonderful to see you. The reason I'm here is kind of, I mean, it's difficult. But I also, I mean, people have already listened to Dr. Chris Donahue throw down about mental health and some gender issues and things. But I kind of wanted to talk to you as a fellow woman, but also someone who's a professional who's, you know, I know that you've worked in covering like nightlife events and just kind of, you're a cool chick.
Gee, thanks. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I know, and I also thought of you because where I tend to be, I mean, I've been trying more in my life to kind of dress up and kind of look shiny and new or whatever you're supposed to do to make people like you. But you just are like a bright shining star when you go out. Like you Aww. Just have a great flair. But I also imagine, I mean, maybe I'm just going on a limb, but I imagine that you might get attention from people, sometimes negative for that. And I'm going to stop talking to you about yourself. Hi, how's it going?
Good. I'm very flattered. You could probably keep going if you'd like. This is fun.
Excellent. I kind of want to just get this out of the way. Do you consider yourself a feminist?
Absolutely.
Okay. Oh, weird. Why?
Because I believe in as much equality, financial, economic, social, between men and women as possible. And that is the basic definition of feminism, which sadly has been so diluted by bullshit in the media and celebrities confusing what these things are and being made as the anti-feminism or feminism spokeswomen. And so now it's sort of diluted and it's made into a man versus woman issue. But at the end of the day, if you say you're not a feminist, you're basically saying you feel that men and women should not be equal in these very core structures of society. And it's just like, well, then you sound kind of like a dick.
Well, I've been trying to find words that aren't genital related to talk about like jerks, but it's like, so funny because, but I totally get it, but I'm all like, yeah, totally a dick. Wait, I like dicks. Oh, wait, but yeah, still a dick. Oh, I have a hard time with the word feminist because it leaves a bad taste in so many people's mouths and it triggers people and they just get these hot flashes of anger.
Yep.
But of course, how could you not be? But the idea, and you pointed out an article before we started mm-hmm. That you read that was, what was it? Like that somebody was all like, no, I like dudes, so therefore I'm not a feminist.
Yeah, it was in the New York Times last Sunday, and it talked about how, like I had mentioned before, celebrities have been suddenly created, being used as like these feminist or anti-feminist spokeswomen. They're interviewed and they're saying, are you a feminist? And they're fearful of saying yes or no. And it started, I mean, it's been happening for a long time, and there have been a lot of strong women who've unabashedly said yes, like Amy Poehler. But then younger women, like this Shailene Woodley gal, who completely confused the idea of what feminism is and said, no, I really like men, unless it was Selena Gomez. I mean, they're all basically the same. One of them said,
burn.
One of them said, no, I love men, I worship men, therefore I'm not a feminist. And then there was another one that said, you know, I don't feel hatred towards men at all, I'm not a feminist. And it was just like, that's not what that is. But what you said makes so much sense. Unfortunately, the definition has completely been morphed. And so when you hear feminist, you're kind of like,
yeah, it's weird because I have plenty of male worship in my personal life, sure, that I have experienced. But are these people saying that they're okay getting paid less than their male coworkers, you know, who, like, is that part of it? Because I feel like, because that's what it is. But,
well, I think an issue is that when they don't know what they're saying, when they're saying, no, I'm not a feminist, they don't realize that it goes beyond this men versus women, I hate men, feminazi idea, and it goes deeper into things like financial inequality. And so when you follow up with them and say, well, then what do you think about this? They don't really don't know what to say, and I'm sure their publicists all have aneurysms and don't know what to do.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I want everyone to have equal opportunities and to be treated fairly. I don't want anyone to, because of what genitals they were born with, to be treated worse off than other people. It just seems silly.
Well, yeah, in an ideal world, we would be treated based on our talents and our contributions to whatever trades we're doing, and it wouldn't have anything to do with if we have, you know, two tits or a dangly bits between our legs. But sadly, it's just, you know, since the beginning of time, you know, when God created us, right? Like with Adam and Eve and stuff and the rib and all of that reality that we live in, it's just boiled down to, you know, how we have sex and, you know, what our sexual purposes seem to be.
So there was this hashtag situation that happened. And first there was the not all men hashtag, responding to, that people who were talking about this issue of hating on women as part of this shooting and other violence, tons of different domestic violence, murder, maiming, you know, talking about ribs, breaking ribs, horrible things that have happened to women mainly, or in this conversation, it's about violence toward women. It being about, you need to calm down and stop talking about it as if all men are doing it. But I have found that on this podcast, the listeners are fantastic. Like, I don't get angry emails usually. Like, people are generally, like, really loving and open-minded, and they know that I'm coming from a safe place and, like, a warm place, like, which I am. Except, there was an episode I did, I don't know, a few months ago, and it was about love and struggles around relationships. I think it was with Emily Morris. And I got a couple really angry letters from a couple guys because Emily and I kind of went into a little bit of a chatty, girly conversation for a little bit of the episode that was all kind of just the struggle of being a woman dating men. And not all men, but just kind of being like, and it's this thing. And I got angry, angry, triggered letters from a couple guys that, you know, you guys can't talk like that. And, like, why are you hating on men? And, like, and I was like, dude, I'm a person who struggles sometimes with dating. Like, let me be a person, like, and express my feelings. Like, geez, I'm not, like, I'm a total advocate for dudes. What? Yeah. And it was bizarre to get this. So I have experienced that not all men thing. It's like, I'm not being heard as a person. It's, you're making it all about these guys that were doing that hashtag. Feels like they were just making it all about them when it was about them.
It was a defense mechanism, and I understand the sentiment, but it unfortunately completely missed the point and distracted everyone from the key issue. It's not that we're trying to make everyone aware that all men are disgusting and look at all the things we deal with as women, and we're so strong and you guys are so weak and awful. It was more about just, here's something that I don't think a lot of people think about during the day. They think that we have come so far and there are female CEOs and yada, yada, and therefore, sort of like how everyone's saying racism is dead. It's a similar thing. Like, this stuff doesn't happen. It's not that. Stop being essentially like feminazi man haters. And so their response was not being compassionate to be like, oh, wow, misogyny can happen in so many different ways, in so many different levels every day. It's more like, stop complaining. Not all men are a-holes. And now I'm creating this hashtag essentially to just distract everyone and to talk about how men aren't so bad. Men, men, men. Me, me, me.
In the previous interview, we did talk about compassion, but I realized in what you just said that it gives me a feeling of that they don't, that these people who started that hashtag and people who were like, oh, really don't care for this Yes All Women movement, don't feel compassion toward women. Generally, And it's bizarre. I mean, it's just a weird thing that there's a... And I think some women... I was at a dinner recently, and a woman was talking about how she hates women because they're so catty. I was like, you need to choose some different people to hang out with.
I mean, yeah, catty women absolutely exist, but hey, not all women.
Yeah. Exactly. Feelings. I realize I'm processing. Did you have any major, like, strong feelings, or something specific? Like, did you feel any specific anger, or bigger than just this was a violent act and isn't this tragic?
I wouldn't say anger. Anger is the last thing that I jump to, which is nice. One of the number one things that I immediately thought, and I did do a little Yes All Women hashtag about it, is we need to stop making these people famous. Mm-hmm. The number one reason why. Well, again, this is a personal opinion, of course. I'm no therapist, handsome therapist or anything. But they know that if they feel like nobody's today, if they shoot a bunch of fuckers tomorrow, they'll be a somebody. They will be all over the 24-hour news networks. They will be on everyone's Facebook feeds. And they can become who they never were. That's the first thing. And then the next thing is, and while also making a name for myself and being a somebody, I can get revenge on a representation of what I hate. Mm-hmm. And I'll feel better after, even if I die. And that was where I initially went, where I was just sort of like, it's happened again, and this motherfucker is going to become a somebody with his face and his name plastered everywhere. And it's been happening. People being so vocal on social media because it's a safe, sometimes anonymous, place to say a quick opinion in 140 characters or less. And not be accountable if, you know, somebody's upset, because you can delete or ignore. And it's just been, it's been a weird weekend as a result. And I've been sort of avoiding reading into people's opinions, because they do tend to make my cortisol levels go up and feel anxious and tense, because there's nothing I can really do. All I can do is absorb the negativity or the positivity. And I found that there's been frustration on both sides. Some of these women going so far with the Yes All Women campaign, where they really end up, unfortunately, perpetuating this feminazi stereotype. And then on the other side, these men saying, that fucking guy, I don't blame him. Just those chicks should have given him some fucking pussy. Like, there are comments like that all over the internet. And so,
yes, there are.
Yeah. So we're just sort of balancing the two and trying not to expose myself to too much of that. And because then I'll get angry.
Right. Yeah. I was concerned about the fact that if he becomes some sort of celebrity post-mortem, then they're copycat instances. Just imagine, I am so appreciative of how many people have not done that. No? And, like...
Totally.
I'm in awe, because so many people are in pain. And it's just... I don't know. I feel things, you know? But it really isn't about him. I will say that I was pleased when I was going around that a lot of articles, at least that I saw on the internet, did not post his picture. And more posted about the visuals about the victims and the crime scene, and kind of it was less about that person and more about the issues at hand. So I did appreciate moving forward and away from him.
So yeah, you definitely make a good point. A lot of the media outlets have been good about leaving the pictures out. I think I'm more bothered by the social media aspect, which honestly has more of a reach than the news media at this point, where the name and the photo in people's complaints and people's comments on Twitter and Facebook have been so focused on the man and his name, the boy. I wouldn't even call him a man, honestly. But
he's a full-fledged adult, you know? I mean,
yes. I guess, I mean, mentally, I just sort of consider it as, you know, very childish thinking, obviously. I feel that we have a social responsibility with the social media to not help make these people into pseudo-celebrities, and just focus on the incident and the issue, not the person.
So... kind of want to talk about something that happened at a Comic-Con convention recently.
Cool.
Which was that I was in Chicago at C2E2, which is a comic and kind of entertainment con. It was really fun. And I walk in, and, you know, because I've been going in and out, you know, it's like you can only handle so much con floor stuff, and then you go outside and grab a burger or whatever and go back in. And I just walked in, and I was standing kind of scanning. I was surrounded by people, and then there were booths, and I was scanning just to see, like, which way should I go? There are so many things to do. And I see as all these people in this intersection of foot traffic, this old guy taking a photo. But as I had scanned, I'm like, there was nothing to take a photo of. What are you taking a picture of? And no one was noticing. And I kind of leaned back a little to see what he was taking a picture of. And he had zoomed in across this intersection of people toward a young female, probably like 15, you know, whose back was turned looking at something. And she was, you know, she had like a little skirt, like she was in cosplay outfit. And it wasn't like a really specifically salacious outfit, like, but there was like a booty short thing and then like a little skirt going on. But it was more like a warrior outfit. So anyway, I look and he is just taking a photo of her ass, basically. And I haven't experienced that myself, where I've seen that happen. The thing that struck me was, well, technically, I think that's legal to be doing what he's doing, but there's also a culture in the cons that people are trying to develop where you respect that, not to objectify and take secret, like, jerk-off photos of other people. I felt that feeling that I think a lot of people feel. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen something where you wanted to speak out or do something, but you didn't know what to do. I don't know, like, does anything come to mind that where you're like, or are you kind of strike me as a speaker outer. Have you always been kind of?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, before, more so now than in the past, you know, as my confidence in my own judgment and what's logical and fair to me has developed, I am definitely more of a speaker outer. I haven't been in a ton of situations where there's been a time where I can say, dude, like, that's kind of messed up. Why I end up doing is if I see someone is in need of some kind of assistance, I'm more likely to just come to that person's aid more so than tell the other person to F mm-hmm. off. Mm-hmm. But nothing like that actually comes to mind. But there, I can understand, and I would imagine it would be very difficult and almost scary to think, hey, I'm seeing this happen. I can stop it in the act. I should probably tell this guy to shove off because you don't know what's going to happen after that. And there's always this,
right.
the fear of like, well, is he going to like punch me in the face? Is he going to be reasonable about it? You never really know.
Yeah, it's something took over for me in that moment because I could have just been like, okay, well, technically that's legal, but gross, dude. But like, I knew that I couldn't act in an angry way, like, or in a like, hey, stop that! Like, what are you doing? Like, that's, you know, in some sort of like, I know the angry female thing doesn't really go over well, and everyone seems annoyed by that sort of catty energy, mm-hmm. and. But I knew I had to do something because I couldn't not walk away and feel bad. And I just wasn't in the mood to feel bad, you know? So I went over and I got really like alpha dog. And I just started going, dude, 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 like, dude, dude, like in his face. Like I just started standing there. And the minute I got up in his face, like not really, like not challenging, but he stood right in front of him. And the minute he saw me coming, he looked down at his camera and started fiddling with it. And I'm like, I just stood there, like my presence. And I didn't say anything else except dude, dude, dude. And I think I might have said bro, bro, dude, bro, dude. And he was fiddling. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, what is he doing right now with his camera? Like, is he just trying to pretend like he wasn't doing anything? And I go, oh, he's trying to delete the photo. So all I had to do was say dude, dude, bro, dude, and stand there and not, and just stand. I just grounded. And he deleted the photo and then he looked up at me. And I acknowledge that when people feel seen, like they like have negative feelings inside, or like they have like strong feelings come up. Mm-hmm. So I looked him straight in the eyes, even though I hate eye contact.
Right.
But I just like looked at him and he looked at me and then he was like, no. Like I just like he was a bad dog.
Oh my God.
It was really satisfying.
I bet. I think that. You just never know how people are going to react, but I do find that we're so used to being either passive aggressive or just completely passive in general, that even having some, like a very neutral presence where you're not saying anything, but you're there and other people being aware of you being there makes them alter their behavior. Mm-hmm. And he clearly was just sort of like a meek, nervous dude in general, I would imagine from his behavior. I'm glad that he didn't try to fight back. Even verbally fight back or any kind of fighting back. I think that we assume the worst in some people, and also we're afraid of being uncomfortable in social situations as well as judged and not liked. And so it's hard to know exactly how to handle things like that. And you did a great job too, because you're right about the whole aggression thing. The worst way to get someone to stop doing something that they probably shouldn't be doing is to make them out to be a villain or a bad person, or essentially scold them like a parent, because that will immediately, because they hate authority.
They'll get defensive. And
yeah, and they'll exactly. And they won't probably stop. They might get satisfaction in continuing to do it. But by coming in there and just without even making them wrong about anything, but just making them aware that someone else is noticing the bad decision they're making, mm-hmm. might be more successful in getting them to push off.
Yeah. I was surprised. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to work for everyone. Right. I have honed my domination energy, I guess, mm-hmm. through attending classes and practicing or whatever. But it was cool because, you know, like you feel bad when you don't speak up, or you kind of meekly, like half-ass do it. Like, maybe you guys shouldn't do that, you know, maybe, you know, and they're like, we're going to do it anyway. I'm like, okay. And you just feel stupid. Like, I've done that. But there was something about, even if he had been like, I don't care. I've been like, well, this isn't a culture where this is not appreciated in this community. FYI, I wouldn't have fought him too hard, but I was just like, that's not appreciated. When I walked away, I felt so good in like a, oh, I did my part. Like, to do it, once people get over the discomfort of doing something, it feels so good on the other side.
Oh, yeah. It's like that in anything in life. If you've never done it and you're not sure how it's going to turn out, you're more likely to just never do it because you're afraid of the outcome. Once you do it once, like your first headstand or, what you know, as simple as that, when you realize it's not that scary anymore, you're more likely to just continue on going. So it's really good. You just essentially just need to practice it and try it.
The whole being afraid walking home at night thing, or like walking through a parking lot alone thing. Do you feel scared when you are uncomfortable walking alone? Yeah. Especially at night?
I do. And I used to live downtown in downtown LA, and which a lot of my friends were like, I can't believe you walk around here. And I got used to it, but there were more than a dozen times in a couple of months when I first moved there where, yeah, I was very aware of footsteps close behind me, mm-hmm. Even during the daylight, honestly, not even just at nighttime, where I was aware of corners where cameras couldn't see it's very nerve wracking. And again, it wasn't always a man that freaked me out. You know, it was mostly a lot of them, mostly men, but no matter what I wear or what I do or what, you can always be a target. And that was when I ended up carrying pepper spray and, you know, the whole nine yards, and being very aware of posture and stature and how to walk when you're by yourself. You know, don't look at your phone, don't listen to music, all that jazz. But yeah, it's like, you can't really avoid that slight fear of, could this person be a bad person? You don't really know. Yeah.
No, you don't know. And I mean, talking to you, I never talked to my female friends about what it felt like to be alone in a parking lot or down the street. I thought through my teens and, you know, college, because college parking lots are terrifying, mm-hmm. that I was paranoid and just feeling, I thought that I was experiencing something unique to me. Where I needed to take more self-defense classes and just kind of, or be smarter about when I walked my car, whatever. I didn't realize that every single woman I know goes through the same terror and defensive kind of just preparing for war just to get to your vehicle or get to the subway or wherever. I had no idea. That's some fucked up shit right there. Mm-hmm. You know, And I mean, if a guy is listening, it's like, don't feel sorry for us necessarily, but just know that that is part of the situation. I just feel like awareness and some compassion and realizing, you know, like when guys get, you know, like when a guy hits on another guy, but that guy's straight, and then they get really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And suddenly, and when I talk more to guys, I don't know if you've talked to guys about this, but a lot of the straight guys that feel uncomfortable or angry or aggressive, there's a feeling of being hunted that they do not like. And it kind of, I mean, at first it's funny because it's so familiar to me. And the fact that they don't experience this and suddenly they're getting all like huffy, it's like, this is what half of the population experiences every day.
Yeah, it's funny reality check, yeah. And I want to make sure, like, I can just picture some listeners being like, well, guys are afraid also to walk in parking lots at night. Like, I just want to recognize, yes, we are not saying that women are the only ones or the only ones who have the right to feel nervous in parking lots. It's just that I think they're, like you were saying, it's easy to sort of not be aware or to forget that and to not actually have compassion for women because there are more reasons, it's scarier to be a woman walking alone in a parking lot, mostly just because chances are whoever might want to attack you is bigger than you.
Can I show you one thing that just happened?
Yeah.
I realize I'm turning this like girl talk, but I feel like...
No. I love that.
So I was on a cruise recently. Mm-hmm. Poor me. I know. But it was fantastic. It was the Jonathan Coulton Cruise Crazy, which he's... It's nerds. Yeah. Nerd things.
I remember you telling me about it. That sounded fun.
Yeah, it was great. And one of the places we docked was a place called Falmouth, Jamaica. And everyone I was hanging out with, they stayed on the boat for different work reasons. And I decided to go into town. And I had looked into what it was like in Jamaica. And I saw a lot of people being afraid of going out without a tour because they were afraid of Jamaicans. Like, basically, it was like, I'm afraid of black people. There was a lot of that. And so I didn't feel like going on a tour. I didn't feel like being around people who were afraid of the black people because there was a lot of white people on this cruise. But I also just did my homework culturally because I know when you go into a different culture, you know, you should know, does eye contact mean sexual invitation?
Right.
I mean, smart. Just basic stuff. And I looked it up and, you know, there was like Jamaicans are cool. Just, you know, eye contact's cool. Smiles are cool. They're very friendly. Be straightforward. And that's just communication styles. I'm like, awesome. I can totally rock some straight up. I can handle it. Because, I mean, I knew there'd be, like, people selling stuff, like, all over the place because it's a tourism thing. So I get out. There's this gated area where it's like sterile. It's, like, all for just tourists. And then you leave the gate and suddenly it's, like, boom, you're in Jamaica. And I wanted to go to this little swap meet that was only on Wednesdays, like, the day we were there. And every time I asked a Jamaican where it was, they'd be like, are you sure you want to go there? Like,
oh, no.
Because I knew it was kind of, it's called the Bendel Market. It was just a place where, like, you buy flip-flops and, like, fruit and stuff. Like, nothing that interesting. But I just wanted to kind of see where they go shopping and stuff. So the farther I walked, the less less women there were in the direction. I was like, that's not a good sign. And I was practicing, like, I asked a guy, where's this market? But I practiced looking confident, smiling at him, and, like, using all my skills around, like, I totally know where I am, and I'm not afraid. Hello, sir, where's the market? And he was, like, so startled that I was talking to him in a confident manner. Like, I saw it on his face. He's like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Well, hello there. Yes, it's over there, but in a way better accent.
Right.
But I get to this market, and it's basically, like, it felt like a what you'd call, like, a shanty town. Like, it was just, like, a tarp city with all these... it was, like, a single lane, like, a tiny, tiny little walkways, lots of shadows. It was suddenly I could tell that I was kind of not safe there. And I was like, maybe I should not have done this, but I kind of want to shop. Yeah. But men started to harass me. And there were women, too. But I started to get guys following me down the alleyways and being like, hey, take me to America, like, you know, let's get married, and you know, pretty lady, pretty lady, pretty lady, and like all this stuff. But this is why I'm telling you, Barbie. You know how if guys start catcalling you and you say like no, you feel like maybe they may come after you and stab you or punch you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I actually would get catcalled walking to Starbucks from one of my first jobs. And what I ended up doing is if I felt like it, I would respond and say, oh my God, yes, here's my number. I would love to, let's get married. And I made so many people uncomfortable. They like ran away. A lot of them were in their cars too. And like, if they were at the red light, I'd be like, oh, I thought you would never ask. Here's my number. And they all just like rolled up their windows. So it was kind of this fun, like, counter action.
I haven't gotten that brave yet. I wish I could, but I still fear for my life. I'm sorry.
Oh, if I was in Jamaica, I probably wouldn't do that. But I was on like Wilshire and La Brea.
Okay, but here's the thing. So because I had done that little bit of cultural research, I felt okay with making eye contact, and I felt okay with being specific and forward. So like this guy started following me and being like, hey, come on, you know, like, what? And kind of with like a really serious, kind of scary face, mm-hmm. like slight aggression on his face. And I think he was selling perfume or something. And I just stopped and looked at him and he said, no. And not like in an angry way, but just like, no, that's enough. No. And I just kept walking and he totally chilled out. And every time, now I will say that I had the privilege of clearly not looking like everyone around me. Mm-hmm. Like I saw a few Asian folks. I didn't see any other white people. So I just stood out clearly. And so them knowing probably that I wasn't from around there, I think that if I had been a local woman, it may have been different and maybe there would have been further aggression. But when I said no, and kind of would just smile a little, but like, that's enough. They left me alone. Like, they were cool.
Amazing. That's great.
Yeah, I started feeling really empowered. Yeah. Like, oh, so this is kind of a fun game they play, but it's not personal, and they know it, and they know that they're just going to try and marry me and go to a different country or get on the boat or whatever. And to realize that I can't do that on my street, but I can do that in Jamaica. And it's okay.
Well, do you think that wouldn't work walking down the street here if you just kind of looked at the guy and was just like, dude, no, and walk away?
My experience when I have done that sort of thing has been rage and being that suddenly it's me requesting a fight with them. Like, suddenly it's violent. Like, I feel like they take it so personally and it's an affront to their manhood. Mm-hmm. I did talk to a few Jamaican women before I went back to the boat about what I had experienced, and they were like, oh, it's so annoying, it's so disgusting. And they were kind of going off about it. And one woman was like, oh, it makes me sick. So I knew that they experienced it as well.
Yeah.
But my experience was that, yeah, they just, like, it was no big deal. It wasn't personal. It's just what they do to all the women.
Yeah.
So even though it's not necessarily, I'm not saying that it's cool that they do that, but the fact that there's not that rage.
That is actually really interesting. You know, I had something happen. I was dancing on Saturday night at a gay club down the street, and like normal, like a lot of girls do on Saturday nights. And there was one of the straight dude prowlers who was wasted trying to dance with everyone. And we were aware of him, and it, you know, no big deal happens. But he started to, at the end of the night, I guess, get desperate because the night was ending, and started to grab me, like literally grab my arm, first my hip and then my arm. And each time he did, I just said, don't touch me. And I was aggressive because it was so, not physically, but emotionally, it was just like, don't touch me. And then he grabs my arm. I said, do not touch me. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me and he goes, why not? I just want to hold your hand. And fortunately, I was surrounded by a bunch of people and he was completely obliterated and a twerp. So I wasn't afraid. It was more just like, how far is this idiot going to go before he realizes that this isn't like a thing you can do to anyone, let alone mm-hmm. me right now. Mm-hmm. And someone pushed him away and he got distracted by something shiny probably and moved on. But it's interesting. You're saying, like, yes, you do get, and I don't know if it's cultural here or of other places too, you get met with this rage, almost insult, insta defense. Like, they deserve whatever they're asking or reaching for.
Yeah. I want to also make sure to explain what you're saying when you say that he was a creeper, like the creepy straight guy. It's not that all straight guys who are at a gay club trying to pick up a woman are annoying. It's that there's that, what would you call it? Like, when they kind of just sort of don't even meet your eyes and just start like humping you out of the blue.
Yeah. It's back from like homecoming dances in high school where you don't really acknowledge each other. You like someone and therefore you want to rub your genitalia against them and assume that that's like the way to go. These kind of creeper guys just pick someone and like start leaning on them and rubbing against you, and you're just sort of like, who's this, what is going on? And then you look over and you're just like, oh my god, there's a guy 2 inches from my face. Where did you come from? This is gross. It's that those are the kinds of guys, they specifically go to dance clubs like that with the goal of just trying to find some sort of warm beating heart with a vagina that they could possibly procreate or copulate with later. So yeah, again, not all men, but they're prevalent.
That's a specific thing. I love when a guy smiles and like those nonverbal things that make me feel totally at ease. And I feel like my face lighting up, but like mm-hmm. when a guy does it well, when they catch my eye and we have a moment and they just smile and they do all these physical kind of, just physically, I sense that they're not a threat to me and they're just friendly and they're curious about me. Mm-hmm. It's not like, I want to put my dick on your face. You know, it's right. like, it's just like, hey, I like your face. It just so happens. Can I be closer to it? Maybe, you know, right. like I love that. Ah,
it's so nice. Well, it takes a real confident man who can accept rejection if it happens, because it's so personal when you make eye contact and acknowledge each other's humanity. It's so safe and inhuman to just sort of like roam up to someone and start wiggling, because you never actually have to see her face or see her face rejecting you. And she doesn't have to see your face feeling rejected. And you could just move, you know, that didn't work. You move on to the next hip that you can rub up against.
That's true. I honestly.
So lame. Lame, lame, lame.
Super lame. I mean, I avoid eye contact mostly in clubs because I'm uncomfortable. So when somebody else can be the leader at being comfortable, I like that. But
oh, yeah.
But Barbie, thank you so much for talking about feelings and and this very interesting cross-section of many issues. Mm-hmm. It feels good. It feels good. I feel like I've kind of gotten it out of my system because a lot came up for me. So thanks.
Yeah. I also thank you. I haven't had a lot of people in my life who've been up for talking about it, and I necessarily haven't either. And it's just nice to be able to talk to someone who is educated and level-minded about it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, to get some of this stuff out. It's good. It's important to talk.
Yeah. Oh, where can people find you in the world, Barbie?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram at Barbie Davenport with an E at the end, or B Davenport on Twitter.
Excellent. All right. Go team fun, you guys. Go team fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.